Hey, Nick.
Hey, Shelby.
What did the proton say to the neutron?
I don't know.
You have an electric personality.
Come on.
Ah-ha!
That sucks.
I can do dad jokes too, even
Yeah,
if I'm
but
a mom.
even if it's bad, you're supposed to say this is stranger still.
This is a stranger still.
Welcome to Stranger Still,
the podcast where we answer questions.
You're doing it right. You're supposed to do it wrong. If you're going to fill in for John, you got to do the John things. Not do an Italian accent.
No. That would be very offensive if I did an Italian accent.
Oh, okay. Because you're Czech?
Yes.
Check me out. I'm Nick Wood.
And I am sadly the wife of Nick Wood and Shelby Wood.
Starting off to a rip-roaring start. That's right. John's still out this week. Still concussed. Still playing hooky. He just doesn't want to be here, I think, at this point.
Right? Yep. So I am your new co-host, and I am very sorry.
That's okay. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. I'm still recovering from our long weekend.
Oh, where did we go?
I don't know, Nick. Where did we go?
Come on. I was trying to segue and make it feel seamless, but then you've got to call it out.
We went to Minneapolis, Minnesota.
And we went to the Minnesota Science Museum.
Yes, it was very fun.
They had a bunch of cool stuff. But
yeah, four or five floors of it.
It's a lot of stuff. But my favorite part of the entire museum was the Quackery Museum.
Yes, you spent a lot
they have
of time
a
there.
Whole section of crappy science from the dawn of time, and I got a lot of ideas for episodes in that section, which
yeah,
you guys are
you
gonna
took
have to
lots
be,
and lots of pictures
yeah,
of stuff.
So I wouldn't forget, and I could research them later. You guys are gonna have to deal with that for the next few months. But I came across this device from like the 1910s called the Electreat, and it was this tens. Unit, you know, the transcutaneous electrical nerve stimulators.
No, nobody knows what that is.
When I describe it, you might. So it's like one of those things that you put all those like little electrodes on your body, and it's supposed to like work out your muscles without doing anything.
Oh, the ab zappers?
Yeah, like those things. That's like a tens exerciser. It was like one of those, and I was like, this is amazing. And we're not going to talk about tens today. That might be another week. But it did give me the idea for this week's episode, electroshock therapy.
Yep. It'll probably give you lots of ideas for those random weeks that you're just like, hey, babe, what should I do this week?
Yep.
And I'll be like, just look through your pictures at the wonderful
yep.
museum.
Well, I won't forget. There's a lot of good stuff there. So, Shelby, you know electroshock therapy.
Yes, I do.
Also known as electroconvulsive therapy or ECT, as it's more accurately called. If you've heard of it, then what is it? You tell me. Expert?
Well, I did take a abnormal psychology class, so I
Dang
do kind of know about this. But I'll pretend that I don't know anything about this.
Give me the dumb answer.
It was like...
Give me the John answer. Not that his answers are dumb, but they're wrong, so... What would John say?
It's when you stick a fork in a toaster and turn it on when you're really depressed.
That was a really good John answer. Can I admit something?
Yes.
I assume that electroshock therapy or ECT, I'm just going to call it ECT from now on, was some bunk science from the 30s or 50s, like a lobotomy that was just like used to abuse people into getting better.
Well, for the most part, it kind of was. It was used on people that don't need it.
Well, it's got a reputation for being a source of abuse, right? And I had no idea that for a long time, it was a well-respected treatment for some psychological disorders. Like, basically, it's basically like what you see in the movies. They take, like, one or two paddles, they put them on your head, like on your temples, and they would send electric shock between them, or if there was one paddle, they would just send out one shock. And it was supposed to treat your psychological disorders. And in the movie, the people, like, they always, like stiffen up and they, like, scream really loud, like they're in pain and stuff.
There's so many things wrong with it, though.
Yes, because what I didn't know, no thanks to movies, is that in real ECT, they are inducing a seizure, which...
Yeah, it's basically like when you use a defibrillator and you... But you turn do it on your brain. Yeah, you...
turn it off, turn it back on, yeah. Is that what you say?
Yes.
You turn the heart off. Well, I had never heard the term electroconvulsive, and if I had heard that, maybe I would have realized that they were inducing a seizure. But it was a surprise to me, so I assume at least one other person will be surprised out there, that it might be effective in treating some people or some psychological disorders. But before we get there, I want to tell you how we got to this point with ECT, because there's some really funny stuff in here.
Should we go back in the Wayback Machine?
That's a different show. That's not our show.
I'm sure more than one show can use a Wayback Machine.
As long as it makes the DeLorean sound.
The TARDIS sound instead.
Nope, I've already put the DeLorean sound in. Suck it. So how long do you think we've been experimenting with ECT as humans?
Probably since we discovered electricity. Benjamin Franklin was just going around and shocking people's heads.
You're not wrong about that, but we were using it before then.
No, we didn't know about electricity before then, that's not possible.
All we had were these elite eels that, like, I don't know. They made owies on your fingers. They made owies on your fingers.
You've been hanging out with your daughter too much.
Well, how would you explain electricity? So ancient Romans used to shock people with electric eels to treat headaches, gout, and childbirth operations.
Oh, yeah, because, you know, when you're pushing a child out of you, that's what you need. It's just a little shock, too. Just add to the pain, you know?
I don't see the problem.
It's one of those things that,
you
know...
It's like an epidural, right?
No! No.
So in 1755, there's a person named J.B. Leroy who said that they cured a case of, quote, hysterical blindness with three treatments of electric shock. And then Ben Franklin, believe it or not.
What's the difference between hysterical blindness and regular blindness? Is, like, it because, you know, it's a woman that was saying that she didn't like what she did every day?
Well, we'll get there in just a second. But I assume it means like when you go into a blind rage, like you just like go into a state of psychosis and you can't see anymore, like that.
Sure.
And then Ben Franklin, ever the sexist, I don't even know if that's true, supposedly used an electrostatic machine to cure a woman of, quote, hysterical fits, which is loaded with sexism.
Because, you know, what woman wouldn't want to be stuck at home with 10 kids in...
Yeah, hysteria is a whole episode on its own.
Yeah, which you
We've done mass hysteria, but not, like, sexist hysteria.
Yeah, you know, I could go on and on about that.
Save it for that episode. Don't get hysterical on me. That's not funny.
No. This is how Nick and Shelby got divorced.
On air even. So our journey specifically with ECT starts in 1917, and of course, you guessed it, malaria.
Of course, you know, that totally has to do with brain electricity.
So there's this guy named Julius Wagner Urig, who was able to treat neurosyphilis by injecting patients with the blood of people who had been infected with malaria. You've heard of this.
Yeah, where you can treat syphilis or you can treat malaria, one of the two.
It's syphilis.
Yeah, you can treat it because it gives them a high fever with malaria.
Yeah, so syphilis can get into your brain and screw you up, and by inducing a fever, that can treat it sometimes.
But now we have antibiotics. Yay!
Yeah, we're on our journey. You skipped like 3 pages ahead.
I am so sorry. No. Antibiotics are great.
They're okay. I mean, I've seen better. So some of these fevers led to people having seizures, but in these experiments with malaria, there's a really small sample size, but they saw a total cure in 3 patients, some recovery in 3 patients, and no change in another 3. So like a 66% success rate.
That's a very, very, very small sample size.
Yes, it is. But it led to a lot of other people saying, what else can we do with seizures? I think they kind of got the impression like, this is a cure-all. But it never quite got that far, luckily.
And Kirol's cure.
That's not our show. Can't do that one. That's not our show.
I've been listening to a lot of Sawbones lately, so I'm just going to rip them off constantly.
So there's one person named Manfred Sackle who tried to induce convulsions with hypoglycemia, or do you know what it is?
What?
I always make John guess.
Hypoglycemia?
Yeah, it's low blood pressure.
I know what that I'm trying to figure out if it was a trick question.
It's always a trick question. There's another guy named Igas Manis who didn't experiment with seizures, but was hot on the like psychotherapy trail, trying to find physical remedies for psychological disorders. And he invented the lobotomy in 1936, and he received the Nobel Peace Prize 13 years later.
Well, that's kind of ironic to get a peace prize for giving people...
It wasn't the peace, it was just the Nobel Prize. I always want to say peace in there, even though it's not the peace prize. Sorry. I even specifically didn't put it in my notes because I started typing and I was like, it's not the Peace Prize, ding dong. But shockingly, we don't do lobotomies anymore.
Yeah. I wonder why.
Because they suck.
You know, cutting into people's brains and just slicing them in half isn't... But, you know, a lot of things right now we're probably going to look back on in 50 to 100 years, like chemotherapy.
Like, how primitive. Like, everyone was throwing up and losing their hair, idiots. I just want to mark this here. Let's dog ear this, that lobotomies would probably make a great episode. But then there is this man named Ladislas Meduna, who noticed in schizophrenic patients... they suffered less symptoms after they had a seizure. So he thought, what if I could induce a seizure? Would that have the same effect on the symptoms? So he experimented with injecting people with camphor oil or... you heard me say this right out loud, right the first time. Oh my God.
Good try, baby.
Thanks. Let's just call it by its shortened name, Metrazol, because that's like the last three letters.
Yeah, because, you know, let's just try to kill people and hope for a seizure instead of killing them.
Well, he had all these notes about how concerned he was about trying this on people. So it took him a long time to like get the nerve to do it. But eventually he injected people with camphor oil. He said that he cured someone that had been catatonic for 4 years. Like they were just in a stupor for 4 years. He did a few more trials with camphor oil before moving on to Metrazol, where he tested it on 26 patients and found positive results in 10 of them.
Can you imagine the sign off on that? Or I guess this is back when they didn't have to sign off on stuff. They're just we're just going to throw stuff at the wall and see what sticks.
There's a lot of patients coming up. Like they didn't even know their names. They didn't get permission from these people.
Yeah, they're just like, I'm just going to stick this needle in you and shoot this stuff in. And like, don't worry about it. We're just, it's water.
You'll feel it.
Yeah.
So he published his studies and his findings in 1935, and people really started to hear about this. Namely, an Italian man named Ugo, and since you're John this week, you got to help me with this pronunciation.
Nope.
Cerletti. Cerletti. Give me your Italian.
No, I can feel John yelling at me through the microphone. No, just sit. Stop. In future time, just yelling back at me.
So he began treating schizophrenic patients with Meduna's technique, but there was a problem with Metrazol, which is...
Oh, I wonder what that could be.
Well, it worked. Like, it gave them seizures, and they showed reduced symptoms. But with Metrazol, right before the onset of a seizure, patients had this overwhelming sense of fear. So some treatments, you'd have to go in and get like 6 treatments. After a while, these people would be so afraid to get the Metrazol that doctors would have to chase them around the room to inject them.
It's just like that fear when people are about to die. They like get this sinking feeling or know something's not right and go, I think I'm going to die. And then they just die.
Yeah.
It's probably that as it hits their veins and goes, oh, no, something bad's going to happen. And then something bad happens.
I mean, it doesn't take effect immediately. But since this wasn't perfect... Cerletti was like, what if I could induce a seizure using electricity? And he had an assistant named Lucino Bini, which is really fun to say, who helped him with like the equipment side of things. Like he had the electrical equipment and stuff. And they had begun to experiment with dogs, trying to induce seizures in dogs.
And aww, poor puppers.
I know, the mortality rate in these dogs was really high, and they were like trying to figure out what's going on.
Who kept giving them these dogs?
They just found them on the street. It was the 30s.
Yeah, animal cruelty probably didn't, the laws didn't exist back then.
Yeah, just like prisoners and clinically insane people, dogs weren't treated that great. But it turns out the reason all these dogs were dying is because they took one electrode, put it in their mouth, and stuck the other one up their butt.
Yeah, you know, how wouldn't that do a seizure of your brain instead of just shocking your own
sending the electrical signal through the entire body increased the chances that the electrical signal would go through the heart and stop it from beating. So all these dogs were dying.
And probably their poor nervous system, like, what got probably shocked fried, too. And
smelled like fried dog in there.
No!
So they went with a method of placing the paddles on both temples or bilateral application. And Sir Letty and Beanie were, again, really afraid to test this out on humans because they're not dogs. But eventually they did test it out in 1938.
On some poor sap that probably doesn't know.
It was a patient with schizophrenia, talked in gibberish. They couldn't figure out who he was because Will wasn't able to tell them, and they had no identification. He came off a train with no return ticket, so they had no idea where he came from. But they found great success with this. So they started with 70 volts for 0.25 seconds or 0.2 seconds because that's what they had done to the dogs. He didn't have a seizure, but he did start to sing at the top of his voice, then fell silent, according to the notes.
Do you know what song he sang?
Oh, Susanna. No, I'm just kidding. I don't know. Hello, my baby. Hello, my darling.
He just got up and started tap dancing.
Yeah, of course. So they ramped it up to 110 volts for half a second against the patient's will. He begged them not to do it. He said, no, don't do that again. It'll kill me. They did it anyway.
And it killed him.
It didn't. So he went into a seizure. And when he came out, he kind of looked at Sir Letty funny. So Sir Letty asked him, what's been happening to you? Probably in Italian, I imagine. And the man answered, I don't know. Perhaps I have been asleep. And cured his gibberish. It was like a Christmas miracle. Probably not in December. But from there, like when that happened, it took the world by storm because there were side effects like long and short term memory loss, psychological changes, and broken bones.
Broken, like from your skull? Or you just...
No, like mostly your limbs. So when people would the seizure, their limbs would flail about. So they'd like hit the wall or a desk or the bedside or something. They'd break their fingers.
Yeah, because let's not, you know, be safe and put them in a safe space.
No. They did start to give people muscle relaxers. Like there was a tranquilizer that was used in African safari hunts that they would use on these patients to relax them. They would also give people barbiturates if they got anxious for the treatments beforehand. They eventually
drug
found
them up. Just drug them
exactly.
up.
Exactly. Just give them a bunch of drugs and they'll be fine with
they'll
it.
They'll be fine. They might not even need the electric shock after all
yeah,
the drugs.
Yeah, they'll just be like, hey, man, everything's cool. They found that placing the paddles in different places could help with psychological and behavioral changes, just depending on where they shocked the brain. Most of these symptoms went away after a while. But it was all we had at the time, and it was showing good results over and over again, and we didn't have a pill you could take. We didn't have antidepressants or anything like that. So like every hospital was using this on a number of psychotic disorders, anything from catatonia, depression, schizophrenia, psychosis, bipolar disorder, to unfortunately homosexuality. And it was about this time that ECT hit its downfall, and for the time it was probably for the better. In some hospitals there was a little bit of mistreatment going on.
Oh, really? I wonder.
So people were given, I mean, we'd mentioned this before, they were given ECT against their will, but it was also used as a threat against some patients. Like, if you don't behave, I'm going to give you electric shock treatments.
It's amazing. I would have never figured that out with how people were treated back then. People had no rights. And they were experimenting on people in prisons and...
Good time to be alive.
Human history sucks.
Yeah, it does. But we also didn't understand mental illness, like, at all. So we thought things like...
We still really don't.
Well, we thought at the time things like homosexuality was a mental illness. So we tried to use ECT to cure that. And these combined with things like short-term memory loss, people would often, and still do, forget events shortly before and after ECT treatments. So they, like, when they come out of it, they were under the impression that they had not consented to the treatment. There's also complaints with informed consent. So people would, they'd be like, do you want this electric convulsive therapy? And people are like, yeah. And they're like, is there anything bad with it? And they're like, I don't know. And then they'd do it anyway. So it wasn't informed consent. They weren't told all of the things that could happen. But this led to big discussions about abuse with ECT and started this reputation that it still has, I think, today.
And hopefully it talks about abuse in mental facilities, but probably not.
I didn't go into that. There's a whole litany of things that went on in mental health facilities. People just didn't understand it, so they abused them, which sucks. But around the 50s and 60s, there was... you might have heard of this thing called hippies. Is that right? there's this big counterculture movement where we had all these physical treatments for mental disorders, and people started to toss that out the window. So out went ECT. Instead, people were favoring psychoanalysis, talking to a therapist. And then in 1962, Ken Kesey published the novel One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, where both ECT and lobotomies were sensationally portrayed as destroying people. I mean, lobotomies did destroy people.
Yeah.
ECT less so, other than the aforementioned abuses. And then the movie adaptation came out in 75, which scared people away from ECT for like the next 40 years. And then the final nail in the coffin was the discovery of pills, like antidepressants, that can do all of the work without all of the effort.
Magic pills.
Yeah, you don't have to shock these people 6 to 12 times over the course of 4 weeks to get any results. You just take a pill every day or so. But now it's making a resurgence, which begs the question, does ECT work? What do you say?
I say it should be used as like a last option if you can't figure out any other things
Yeah.
But I'm also not a doctor, so yes. Surprise. I didn't do, the months and months of research and seeing the results and mm-hmm. non-results or whatever. And
well, even with the results that are out there, there's still a huge debate on it. Like, there's this whole website, ectjustice.com, that's saying that we need to stop ECT treatments immediately.
Yeah. Well, it's so hard because, some people need it and it works for mm-hmm. them. But also, like, if you just watch somebody get shocked without the muscle relaxers and without, like, you know, being strapped down for their own safety because,
break their fingers.
So they don't break their fingers and their arms or whatever. Like, it's scary to watch somebody do that, especially if it's somebody that you know and love.
Seizures are just scary.
Yeah. Seizures are very, very scary. Yeah.
So I found one debate that was published in the British Medical Journal where some people were saying that we need to stop giving ECT treatments in general, and they claimed that ECT resulted in permanent brain injury, slurred speech, even death. Only half of any studies done on the effectiveness of ECT showed temporary improvement over placebo. They claimed that the average voltage was 150 volts, which is dangerous to your brain. And 40% of treatments in England were still given without informed consent.
See, however, that's the big thing, is informed consent.
Yes.
And especially for people that have mental disorders that are like very mm-hmm. like schizophrenic or depressive or whatever, they might not all like understand mm-hmm. what's going on, but that's the same as giving them meds and stuff. If they're true. That, off and can't think and can't interact with people, then they can't really give informed consent. And then that's a whole other
topic. Area of expertise. But based on my research, most studies led to ECT being effective. So the other side of the debate says that like all the slurred speech and memory problems, most of them will go away. You'll regain your memories. There is a mortality rate. It's about 2 in every 100,000, which is why it should probably be left as a last resort. Any death is a bad death. Then most of the studies that the other side had argued were like old and no longer reliable. But there's a lot of studies out there showing ECT is effective. John Hopkins has it published on their website that 70 to 90% of patients with depression see improvement. And people have to get treatments, anywhere from 6 to 12 treatments to find success. but the success is there. It comes faster than medication and has a higher success rate than most antidepressants or other medication.
Yeah, and a lot of antidepressant medications also have major
side effects.
Everything has side effects. Yeah. And we're still, you know, figuring out all of the meds anyway. Like we don't even know how medicine works, a lot of medicine. We know that it works and what dosages to give people and whatever. But we don't
know the mechanics.
Yeah, we don't know why it works.
Yep. Same with ECT. I just want to say as an editorial note, it's the current that makes electricity dangerous, not just the voltage. So supposedly you could ramp up the voltage, but if the current isn't at a dangerous level, it's not gonna hurt you. Also, I think the average is 110 volts, something, 115 volts, somewhere in there.
Okay, what's the difference between voltage and current?
I watch so many videos trying to figure this out, and I have no idea. So current is...
So then why mention it?
Because someone out there knows exactly. So current is the rate at which electricity travels in a second, I think. And voltage is the amount of energy, but you need the frequency of its amplitude, because... current is measured in milliamps or amperes, and you combine the two, and that's how you get current. Frequency and voltage gives you current.
Okay.
Probably. So anyway, all of that to say, ECT is effective.
We think.
Again, I'm not an expert. These days, it's a hell of a lot safer. There are just as many proponents for it as there are people against it. Like Carrie Fisher was famously in favor of ECT. She underwent treatment for her depression. And these days, the Mayo Clinic cites it as treatment for, this is straight off the website, severe depression, particularly when accompanied by detachment from reality or psychosis, a desire to commit suicide or refusal to eat. Treatment-resistant depression, a severe depression that doesn't improve with medication or other treatments, aka last resort. Severe mania, a state of intense euphoria, agitation, or hyperactivity that occurs as a part of bipolar disorder. Other signs of mania include impaired decision-making, impulsive or risky behavior, substance abuse, and psychosis. I'm trying to make it sound like a pharmaceutical commercial. catatonia, characterized by lack of movement, fast or strange movements, lack of speech, and other symptoms. It's associated with schizophrenia and certain other psychiatric disorders. In some cases, catatonia is caused by a medical illness, and agitation and aggression in people with dementia, which can be difficult to treat and negatively affect quality of life. That last one, there's a lot of studies on ECT on old people, elderly people.
I had people with dementia.
Yeah, because a lot of the medication they can't take anymore.
Yeah.
And these days, ETC is pretty safe. They can give it to them. What were you gonna say?
And there's right now there's no cure for dementia and Alzheimer's, right. And we're still trying to figure out how it affects the brain and how to combat it. So yeah.
Anything is a step in the right. No, that's not true. There's some bad things you could do in the wrong direction.
See, it's just hard with this that, you know, they were talking about back in the day, and I'm sure there's some now that have, you know, bad doctors in some mental institutions or whatever that give it to people that don't need it.
Yeah.
And
I think that's where the bad reputation came from. I'm sure it happens, but I can't imagine a doctor doing that today, especially like one that's trusted.
It's just hard because in every single profession out there, there's good ones and bad ones. And
that's why
police officers get really bad reps and some doctors get bad reps and like daycare people give bad teachers, anybody with a little bit of power and that can literally change people's lives. Mm-hmm. There's good people that can help people and change their lives for the better and help them out of a bad situation. But there's also very bad people
that like the power too much.
Yeah, that like the go into those professions because of the power trip that it gives them.
President, sorry. Something in my throat there. Excuse me. I'll edit that out later. So I mean, if you have a bad doctor, get out of there as fast as you can. But going into a modern ECT treatment, they're going to do all the normal stuff. They'll give you an exam, both physical and mental. They'll do blood tests. They'll do heart tests to make sure your heart's healthy because you're going to have a seizure. So if they don't do that, that's a red flag. You'll probably have to fast for the treatment because these days they're going to give you general anesthesia to knock you out. And this is meant to prevent you from thrashing about during the seizure so you don't break a toe or whatever. They'll take like a normal electrode, like the size of a half dollar or whatever. And they can either do unilateral treatment where they just put on one temple or bilateral treatment where they put it on both temples. It just kind of depends on which area of the brain they want to affect. They'll also hook you up to an EEG so they can see when the seizure begins and ends. They'll pass a small electrical current through the electrode or electrodes. And you'll go into like a, I think it's like a 5 minute long seizure or minute long, really short.
It's very short. I remember when I was in my psychology class, we actually watched somebody that had Yeah, it was really interesting.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember. It was also like 6-8 years ago that I took this class, but it was super interesting because we talked about it, but it was only for like a couple days or a week or something. Yeah. It was different therapies for depression.
Yeah.
And it was, they actually showed a video of somebody like before the treatment and then all of the muscle relaxers and whatever they had to take. And then during the treatment and then after, and like how much different they talked. Yeah. And it's
kind of nuts. So for prolonged results, you'll probably have to go in 2 to 3 times a week for 3 or 4 weeks. They usually say 6 to 12 treatments. And most patients apparently see results in six weeks, which is faster turnaround than your typical medication. You'll still probably suffer from memory loss.
Yeah, you are shocking your brain.
Your brain. Your memories are likely to return later on. You might also be a little delirious for a while or just confused. And you might have some pain, like a headache or a jaw ache or, you know, sensitive skin on your temples because you did pass some electricity through it. But I think there are people out there that think that ECT shouldn't be used as a last result. I don't think I agree with that. We're getting into opinion territory here.
Yeah.
I think that there
again,
are other methods.
Again, we are not doctors.
We are not doctors. This is opinion territory of two non-medical professionals. Just people interested in psychology. But like there, if you have minor depression, you can exercise, you can take antidepressants. There's many other solutions, but if it's like chronic and debilitating and you can't live your life and you've tried everything else, I mean, these days it's pretty safe as long as you have the right doctor. So
yeah. And that's a big thing is ask them for a second opinion. Even when like regular medications, like ask for different opinions and like help. I don't usually say this, but Google your medications and see what the side effects are and figure out what. Usually Google is not okay for medical stuff.
Yeah, but
trust
if you're looking up symptoms, usually that's pretty trustworthy.
I did have a daughter in the 21st century, so I did Google a lot of stuff and
that's a bad idea.
I probably shouldn't.
Yeah. I'm saying is it shouldn't have the stigma, I don't think. I mean, there is a certain amount of danger, but every medical treatment has a level of danger. And I think that movies and television have really given this a bad reputation that it doesn't quite deserve.
I mean, look at like almost every single horror film. If it's like based in psychology, always have electric.
Like American Horror Story did it in one of their seasons.
Oh, I'm sure.
It does have a dark history, but it was also successful. Like people, like you
people
said, there's always going to be.
It.
Well, people that didn't need it still got it, and that's where the abuse comes in, and that's where that's a whole different story. But yeah, I did a 180 on this. I was like, that's totally stupid science, and now I'm like, oh my god, this is so fascinating.
Yeah, I can't believe we haven't talked about this before. I feel like when I was in college, I would have talked to you about it, but there was a lot of stuff going on in college that I learned about that. I was just like, hey, do you know about this?
I was probably like, yeah, let me go back to playing Super Meat Boy.
Probably, let's be honest, you played that for a lot of hours.
I did. That game was really fun. I should go play that.
No. No, last thing you need is to get into that video game right now. You spent enough time at work and stuff.
We'll take a break and I'm going to go play Super Meat Boy.
No. Super Meat Boy! So,
what is this?
Where can people find you?
You're not supposed to do this. I don't know what to say. I always have John say it. I think he says StrangerStillShow.com. You can also find us on Facebook. Go to the Facebook group. If you want to hear a topic, I put up monthly polls to ask what you guys want to hear.
Most of the time.
Sometimes I forget. But this month, I did for the last 3 weeks. And that's where this topic came from. So also, if you want to like know what's going on, like what we're going to cover, it's usually the top three or four on the monthly poll. You can search hashtag monthly poll in the group.
Or send in an email. I don't think anybody's ever sent you in an email, God. Have they?
They have. We've read them on the air, and now I gotta check the email.
Please start sending Nick emails to make him feel guilty about not checking his email. God.
Let's see how many unread emails are in the inbox. 561. Most of these are spam.
Okay.
Our spam filter is not good. Yeah, you can send us an email at podcast@strangerstillshow.com. Also, if you like our show, you can support us at patreon.com/flyingmachine. And hey, if you listen to her and you know someone that listens to the show.
It is Christmas time. Tell somebody you don't know what to get that person for Christmas. Just say, hey, I signed you up to listen to all of this bonus episodes.
Yeah, you get a bonus episode from every single show on the network every single month. This month we talked about my trip to LA and Mississippi. I was very tired and no nonsense. It was pretty good. Shelby, this has nothing to do with today's episode because of the things we talked about, but I did find a pretty funny description of the Electreet mechanical heart. And since that's what gave me the idea for this episode, I wanted to read this to you because the guy that invented it was really stupid.
Oh, yay.
So this came from the Edward Hand Medical Museum. This is the Electreet mechanical heart. This cure-all device was patented by Charles Willie Kent in 1919 and was designed to relieve chest pain, improve circulation, and regulate internal organs, among many, many other reputed therapeutic effects. This device was one of the first TENS devices, which claimed to offer pain relief as a result of the application of electrical shocks to a person's skin.
Isn't that kind of ironic to do pain relief for shocking?
Yeah. Don't ask questions. It has been estimated that in the 25 years following its patenting, the Electreet Manufacturing Company was able to sell over 250,000 of these devices. Historically, the Electreet carries great significance, as Charles Willie Keat was the first person to be prosecuted for the misbranding of a medicinal product under the Food, Drugs, and Cosmetics Act of 1938, the first U.S. legislation to combat quack medical devices and false advertising. Keat, this is the best part, Keat had charges brought against him in 1947, and in 1950 was given a verdict of guilty for making false and misleading statements about the medical effects of his product. In his trial, legend has it that when asked what a battery was, Keat answered that, quote, "There are 10,000 batteries and no two are alike." When asked to describe the workings of an electrical transformer, he replied, "I am not a walking dictionary. It is an unanswerable question." And finally, when asked if he had used the Electreet himself, the medically ignorant Keat replied, "Yes, sir, for menopause."
Oh my God!
If he were alive today, he'd be selling homeopathic medicine. That's why we do this show.
Oh my goodness.
It's good stuff. Got any other thoughts?
I don't know. Is there anything else you want to talk about Minnesota?
There's a lot of good stuff. They had like an Orgon chamber. They had those little exercise machines that had the belt on it. You'd put the belt around your belly and it'd shake. You know.
And every single like if it shows a 50s housewife on TV, it shows one of those.
Yeah, it has like you can make your own misleading advertisement for like patent medicine.
Oh, they had a whole thing on patent medicine. I was trying to get you to watch Rory so I could look at some stuff, and you were just like, "Dude, don't talk to me." And
I was just like, "Show me, look at this," and you're like, "Yeah, I know."
You and your dad were just walking around, and I'm just like, "Hey, you want to look at any of this other stuff or watch your kids so I can do it?" And you're just like, "No, babe, I need to look at all this stuff. Yeah. I am in heaven right now. Like, leave me alone."
They had like a section on radionics. They had oh geez, what's the poisonous water, the radioactive water they gave people? It might have just been radium water or something like that. They had
we need to post that picture.
I have a lot of pictures to post.
No, yeah. Of you and Rory.
In the it was like a mind, it was a phrenology helmet.
Yeah, you already did that episode.
Yeah, they had a bunch of phrenology stuff there, and I had to explain to my dad what it was.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't listen because he doesn't let me. But yeah. it was great. We'll post pictures. Go to our Facebook. Facebook.com/group/strangerstill, I think. I haven't said that one in a while, so I'm not 100% on it. Just search it in the Google bar on Facebook. Yeah. They have a Google bar, right?
A Google bar on Facebook.
Yep.
Two different companies.
Shh, not for long.
Let's see. Anything
else? They have the Body Works.
Yeah. I need to do a special thank you to Hannah Wood for taking our daughter to a dance class tonight so I can help you and you have to do your podcast for yourself.
She might be listening. She listened to the episode of Limited Cell where my dad learned what bust a nut means. I just had to plug that really fast because it's my favorite story to tell right now. I think that'll do it for this week. What do you think?
I think so.
Well, in that case, I'm still Nick.
I'm still Shelby.
And this is Stranger Still. Aw, so cute! Aw!
I give you the incredible flying machine!